opening the Rafah border for 20 humanitarian trucks to enter into Gaza. You know, and what you think the significance of that is, if there is any, and the specific concerns you've raised as a doctor, the tens of thousands of pregnant women in Gaza today, what the fate of patients there are who are in urgent need of medical care and none is available.
Well, one of the most striking scenes was the images of children who died in the uterus of their mothers, because they were pregnant and they were hit. But there are 5,500 Palestinian women who are giving birth this month. And we already received terrible, terrible information about them giving birth in the streets because there is no place to go to. The south of Gaza does not have any space anymore, besides the fact that there is no safe space for anybody. Israel has already destroyed more than 80,000 homes and houses of people, and people have no place to go to. And there is very high risk now of an increased infant mortality, perinatal mortality, and maternal mortality because of the situation that Palestinians find themselves in. No sanitary facilities, no drinking water, no running water, no proper sewage system. It's a total disaster. And total humanitarian crisis. You asked me about something about President Biden. Can you repeat the question,
yes,
please?
Yes, about the decision to let convoys, humanitarian convoys, 20 in from Egypt into Gaza.
Imagine 2.3 million people already deprived of water, electricity, medications, and food for 12 days. And you send 20 trucks for them? What does that change? It's less than a drop in the ocean. That's much less than what people need. It becomes only a cover of the crime that is happening. I'm not against, of course, bringing these trucks, whatever they can help. But that's not what we need. We need an open corridor so that food, water, electricity, as well as medications can get to people. We have medical teams in Gaza. We have Palestinian medical relief teams working along the work of the Red Crescent as well as the Ministry of Health. And they are calling us every day, telling us we don't have any more medications. We don't have even dressing to help the injured people. We don't have proper sanitary facilities. How can we deal with patients in these conditions? You know, patients were treated and surgical operations took place the other day on the stairs of the hospital because there were no beds left. And the massacre that happened in the Baptist Hospital was so shocking and practically brought the whole health structure down. And now already three hospitals stopped working because they have no electricity, because they don't have sufficient medications. It's a humanitarian disaster that is building up. And the only explanation is that Netanyahu wants to solve what he thinks is the demographic problem of Israel, being that number of Palestinians today in West Bank and Gaza Strip and in Israel itself is equal to the number of Israeli Jewish people. He wants to eliminate that. First, by ethnically cleansing the 2.3 million people in Gaza, pushing them out of Gaza and then annexing Gaza Strip, and then initiate a process of ethnic cleansing for Palestinians in the West Bank, first in Area C and then in the rest of the West Bank. That's why the King of Jordan is so shocked about these plans, because he knows that he's coming next. After they finish with Gaza, they will move to the West Bank. This is something that nobody should accept. I never thought, I admit, and I was wrong, I never thought that Israel could dare to conduct ethnic cleansing in the 21st century. And unfortunately, I was wrong. That's exactly what they are doing today. And I ask the question. They said that Israel has the right to respond. Okay, they responded. They responded. They already killed almost 4,000 people. How many thousands of children? How many thousands of patients, how many thousands of women and men should die before Israel decides it's enough? Or should all the millions of Palestinians disappear from Palestine, and disappear from this world, so that these fascists, and I call them fascists and Nazis, that are governing Israel would be satisfied.
Dr. Barghouti, I just want to quote to you, I think this is the senior minister to whom you were referring, comments he made, Israel's foreign minister, Eli Cohen, saying in an interview with Israel's Army Radio on Wednesday, he said, quote, that at the end of this war, not only will Hamas no longer be in Gaza, but the territory of Gaza will also decrease. So if you could talk more about that, elaborate on your point about what precisely they intend to do with Gaza, and then talk about what's happening in the West Bank. You said it's also the site of war crimes, of ethnic cleansing, but also the protests that are directed against the Palestinian Authority there. We had earlier in headlines that the protests across the West also taken aim at the ruling Palestinian Authority, which has launched a violent crackdown on demonstrations. A 12-year-old Palestinian girl named Razan Nasrallah was shot and killed by PA security forces Tuesday during protests in Jenin. So if you could talk about that, the situation in the West Bank.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but you asked about something else before the West Bank?
Yes, I just cited to you the person whom I thought you were mentioning earlier, the Israeli foreign minister about.
Yes.
Please.
Eli Cohen. Mm-hmm. The foreign minister of Israel means that Israel is turning now, since Egypt is not allowing the ethnic cleansing of people in Gaza to Egypt up till now, he's turning to Plan B. And Plan B is to remove everybody in the northern part of Gaza and in Gaza City itself. That is about 1.1 to 1.2 million people. Move them down to the southern parts of Gaza. And then annex that area. Cutting down the size of Gaza from 140 square miles to maybe less than 50 square miles, or maybe 60 square miles. This is the only explanation of what he said, shrinking the size of Gaza, bringing it down. And they think, the Israeli government thinks, that if they cluster all these 2.3 million people in such a small area, then the pressure will be so huge that Egypt will be obliged to open the borders and let them out of Gaza. And in that case, Israel would have achieved its original plan of total ethnic cleansing, pushing Palestinians out of Palestine into the Sinai. Mind you, 70% of these people have already been ethnically cleansed by Israel in 1948. They were displaced from parts of the 520 communities that Israeli troops erased to earth back in 1948, committing 50 massacres and pushing Palestinians out of Palestine. They want to repeat the same ethnic cleansing again. But let me tell you, this is not the last plan of Israel. Netanyahu made it very clear. Maybe I am repeating that. He carried the map of Israel in the United Nations in front of the whole world weeks ago, in which that map, the map of Israel, included the annexation of all of the West Bank and the annexation of all the occupied Gaza Strip. This is their plan. Annexation, ethnic cleansing, and committing genocide against Palestinian population. But in response to your question about West Bank, let me tell you the situation here is very dangerous, is very grave. First of all, Israel imposed practically a process of fragmenting the West Bank into 224 small islands, or ghettos, if you want, separated from each other by no less than 640 military Israeli checkpoints, many of which are closed completely. For instance, Jericho now is totally closed. And then the wall, of course, itself, and the so-called bypass roads, which are segregated roads exclusive for Israelis. Many, many Palestinians cannot move now from one area to another. Our health work is becoming very, very complicated in the West Bank because we cannot move medications, we cannot move medical teams. And the worst situation is in the so-called Area C, which represents no less than 60% of the West Bank, where settlers are continuously attacking Palestinians. The other day, Israeli terror settlers attacked the village of Kusra in Nablus area, killed three Palestinian civilians. The army, the Israeli army came and killed a fourth one. The next day, when the people were having the funeral of these four Palestinians killed, the settlers came back again and killed two more people, a father and a son. Six people in one village in less than 24 hours. The terror of settlers is everywhere. But in addition to that, the Israeli army is conducting wide-range campaign of arresting Palestinians. According to my information, no less than 750 Palestinians have been arrested during the last week, and the number is growing, which means that the number of prisoners in Israeli jails is more than 6,300 now, many of whom are held under the so-called administrative detention, which means they don't know why they are in jail. They don't have any legal due process. Their lawyers cannot even defend them because they don't know what they are charged for, including 260 children who are in Israeli jails at the moment. Add to that the fact that already more than 75 Palestinians have been killed, and the Israeli army now thinking that everybody is busy with what's happening in Gaza. They are now conducting military operations against Palestinian civil areas, including Tul Karim refugee camp, and before that, Jenin refugee camp, and this can go on. So it's a very dangerous situation and a very risky situation
for
all Palestinians.
Dr. Barghouti, we only have a minute, but what about and why, then, the Palestinian Authority violent crackdown on demonstrations with the 12-year-old Palestinian girl, Hassan Nasrallah, shot and killed in Jenin?
That was also a crime committed by Palestinian security forces, and it should not have happened. It is unacceptable to encounter demonstrators with gunfire. That is unacceptable. We're not calling, of course, for chaos or internal division here among Palestinians. We have enough of what we have in front of us, fighting the Israelis. But the reality is that the behavior of the security apparatus is unacceptable, including suppression of freedom of expression. People were mad. They were angry at what was happening in Gaza, about the killing of people inside that hospital. And maybe they made some, I mean, they went out of control. But responding to that by shooting Palestinians, that's the last thing that we can accept or should accept.
Dr. Mustafa Barghouti,
I just wanted to say that they have to also abide by international law and stop this wrongdoing.
Dr. Barghouti is a Palestinian physician, activist, politician, serves as General Secretary of the Palestinian National Initiative. Coming up, we'll hear the voices of the historic Jewish-led protest in Washington, D.C. Thousands came out. Hundreds were arrested, calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Back in 20 seconds. What's with the Wind by the Gaza Youth Choir? This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
On Capitol Hill, police arrested at least 300 activists Wednesday as they held a nonviolent sit-in protest in the Cannon House office building to demand lawmakers press for a ceasefire in Gaza. The arrest came as thousands of people rallied on the National Mall for a demonstration organized by the groups If Not Now and Jewish Voice for Peace. Organizers called it the largest ever protest of Jews in support of Palestinians. Among those who spoke was the only Palestinian-American Congress member, Rashida Tlaib.
I wish all the Palestinian people would see this. I wish they can see that not all of America want them to die, that they are not disposable. They have a right to live. They didn't ask to be born in occupation. And so I just want to thank you on the bottom of my heart. The dehumanization has chipped at my soul, and I can't imagine what it's made so many other people feel. So you all being here to speak truth, because the warmongers are out, y'all. They are ready. They want to kill and not stop. It's pure insanity. I still remember the cry of Maya, who was being dragged out of that festival, crying for her father. But just like Portia Maniaza, who is number one in her scores. I don't know if you know anything about Palestinian culture, but it's a big deal that somebody from Gaza could score number one on her. You know, it's like the valedictorian for the whole Palestinian people. And both of them are victims. They're victims of the oppression, of the violence. They both deserve to live. I don't care what their faith is or their ethnicity. Maya didn't deserve to be targeted. Neither did Shaman deserve to die. And that's the common humanity that we all have to remember, because they're trying to take it away from us.
Yeah. That's
and we have to make sure it doesn't happen. Not on our watch. I'm going to be real with you all. My colleagues, many of them, I usually don't talk smack about them. No, I'm usually considerate because I don't like them policing me, so that I don't police them. But as an American, not just as a member of the United States Congress, I am ashamed. I am ashamed that they're saying, not yet, maybe next week.
Shame.
Not yet, Rashida. Maybe in a couple of days. How many more have to die?
That was the only Palestinian-American Congress member, Rashida Tlaib, addressing Wednesday's historic Jewish-led protest of thousands in Washington. This is the award-winning author and writer, Naomi Klein.
Thank you all for being here. I have never seen anything like this in my history of Jewish anti-Zionist activism. It's been decades. We used to be tiny. We are huge and growing. We have a sacred responsibility to engage with our parents, our grandparents, our uncles, our brothers and sisters, and try to save their souls, to keep them from indulging in this quest for bloody vengeance. We are here because we will not let our fears of anti-Semitism be manipulated in this way as cover for war crimes and colonial land grabs and to foreclose on the possibility of a political solution, which will only come with an end to occupation, with an end to apartheid, with true Palestinian freedom and self-determination. We will not use the fact that many of our parents and grandparents and great-grandparents were refugees from genocide to justify making hundreds of thousands or even millions of new Palestinian refugees. These are not our leaders. Not in the Knesset with its so-called unity government, and not here in Congress, which reconvenes now in part in order to approve new money and new weapons to send to Israel for its genocidal attack on Palestinians.
The award-winning author and writer Naomi Klein. When we come back, the legendary Israeli journalist Amira Haas in 20 seconds. This was not my story by Rimbana and Henry Koich. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
To talk more about Israel's bombardment of Gaza, as well as Wednesday's historic Jewish-led protests in Washington, we're joined by the longtime Israeli journalist Amira Haas, the Haaretz correspondent for the Occupied Palestinian Territories based in Ramallah. Her latest piece is headlined, "With No Water or Electricity from Israel, Gazans Risk Dehydration and Disease." Haas is the only Israeli Jewish journalist to have spent 30 years living in and reporting from Gaza and the West Bank. Her books include Drinking the Sea at Gaza, Days and Nights in a Land Under Siege. Amira Haas joins us today from New York. Welcome back to Democracy Now, Amira. If you could talk about, this is the first time that we're having you on since this crisis began, your response to what's happening and the latest news.
It's very hard to add anything after, of course, what Dr. Mustafa said. It was in such details describing the horrors. And unfortunately, I'm not in the country. I came a few days before all this hell started. And I was yesterday at the demonstration in D.C. after a talk I gave at Georgetown. So I was in the demonstration not to cover it, but to be part of a group that adds, that first of all demands to put an end and to declare immediate ceasefire. And I wanted to share to be with people that we share common feelings of grief, of fear for the people that we know and that we love, of mourning for the people that we know and we love, people, both Jews and Israel and Palestinians, people who can say at the same time can be emotional and rational, can be appalled by what happened on Saturday, October the 7th, and at the same time say it is not history did not begin with October 7th. People who grieve and are pained by what is happening, and I feel that every word that I say is hollow because it's not enough. The words that I need do not exist in our dictionaries to describe the horror that my friends in Gaza now go through. And we are here, and yes, we gather and we meet and we talk and we talk again and we come on our TV programs. But we don't reach the main people. We don't reach as Dr. Mustafa said, we don't reach the American leaders who are the only ones who could force Israel to stop this carnage now. And we don't reach Western countries who could also put some pressure. And we don't reach the Israeli public that is so drunk with the will to take revenge of what happened on October 7th, that does not even know one detail. And even if it knew one detail about Gaza, it doesn't care because it just wants a revenge. But revenge, I think, is not enough to explain what is happening. The Israeli government is carrying on the political program of the extreme fascist, messianic, religious, right-wing, settler right-wing party led by Bezalel Smotrich, who already in 2017 said that he has a plan for Palestinians. They have three options, he told the Palestinians. You either give in and accept that you will never have a state, you'll never be free, you'll never have your right for self-determination materialized, and then you can live as fifth grade, sixth grade, whatever individuals in this in Israel. The second option for you is to emigrate. As we call sometimes by transfer by willful transfer, expulsion by consent, and the third option, if you don't agree to give in and if you don't agree to emigrate, and you resist, the Israeli army will know what to do with you, and this is what is happening now, both in Gaza and the West Bank. Israel is carrying out the plan, the political plan of this extreme fascist settlers colonizing right wing. This is for years. We people on the Israeli left have been warning about the brutalization if things continue, the brutalization that might come to a place of no return, and. I never thought that I always hoped that when I warned about the danger of brutalization, the possibility of brutalization, that this would be, this warning would work, that it, we will not reach it. And I'm so afraid to say now that we reach it, that we've reached it, and the world and the Western world is appallingly doesn't intervene to stop it. You know, I was at the demonstration yesterday and I cried. Maybe I don't, I hold myself not to cry all these terrible days, not much, only sometimes, but I cried when some people spoke about their grandparents, Holocaust survivors, and I felt I was there also to represent my dead parents who are Holocaust survivors in this, you know, call to the world to, you know, how can they stand on the side and do nothing to stop this terrible slaughter? I cannot bear myself talking here safely in New York while I know what 2 million people, more than 2 million people are going through, and nothing can justify what is being, what Israel, what we, what my tax money is causing right now. I don't know if my tax money is now the behind the missile that might kill one of my good friends, loved friends in Gaza. This is really appalling, appalling, appalling beyond words.
Amira, in your latest piece for Haaretz, you write about your family, your friends who are still in Gaza, in Tel al-Hawa, in Gaza City. Israel's ordered Palestinians to leave the northern part and go south. That's where Gaza City is in the north. Can you talk about them, what options they have, their decision to stay, and also President Biden giving a major address tonight, coming back and saying he's going to get the border open so 20 trucks can come in with some supplies.
That's a joke. Anything which is not a complete ceasefire, immediate ceasefire, is you know, dropping an ocean is a cliche, but it is. It's less than a drop in the ocean. I mean, my friend who wrote to me, her brother-in-law is in a wheelchair, half paralyzed. They couldn't leave because they said, how can we leave the house with him? And we cannot leave him behind. And her mother is old. So they are there. I cannot even imagine what they have been through. She just sent me a flower this morning. They had a little shred of internet, so she sent me a flower responding to my WhatsApp some hours earlier. I have friends cramped in a school in Nusayrat refugee camp, and a mother, a refugee of 48. She was a child in 48. And have been seen so many wars since then.
We have 30 seconds, and then we're continuing this conversation, and we will post.
So I think of all the sick people, sick parents that my friends are staying with them because they don't want to leave them alone in dying under the bombing, and so they didn't save themselves in order to be with their parents.
Amira Haas, we're going to continue this conversation and post it at democracynow.org and play it on Democracy Now! Amira Haas is longtime Israeli journalist and correspondent for Haaretz and the occupied Palestinian territories, normally based in Ramallah. This is Democracy Now! I'll be speaking in Charleston, West Virginia tomorrow night. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, this is Jesse Brown, the host of Canada Land, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.
Thank you.